Hello, this is Gideon Rothstein, and this is a response of the day for the 24th of Sivan. Today we will take up a tshuva, a response of Rav Kook. Rav Kook has many books of responsa. This one is from a book called Da'at Kohen, which is about Inyane Yoredea, about issues having to do with Isur V'Heter, about general prohibitions and things that are permissible. It's Siman Kuf Nunhei 155. Just the idea that Rav Kook has several volumes of tshuvot is a reminder that, which sometimes I think people forget, that Rav Kook was, among other things, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, a tremendous Torah scholar in the traditional Lithuanian sense of a Torah scholar, and spent much of his time and effort on ordinary halachic questions, and that much of the thought issues for which he has become more well-known were sort of a private endeavor in his own life, and later were brought to light and have the value that they have in the ways that they do, but that he also was an ordinary chief rabbi, Torah scholar, ruling on issues and getting involved in various controversies when he thought important. And I think it's a facet of his legacy that bears remembering. So whenever I get a chance to, I certainly will try to share tshuvot that Rav Kook wrote. In this case, it's even more of an interesting tshuva for me, and therefore more enticing to share with you, in that this is from the 24th of Sivan of Tuf Resh Pei Chet, 1928. And it's an example of, and other people have noticed this before me many times, that Rav Kook, for his image, is being welcoming and open and friendly and trying to draw people through love, and that's not untrue, but that when it came to halachic issues, he could sometimes rule more stringently than we might have expected from a man with that image. So how you put that all together in a person, there are people who study these questions, and that's not my point here. It's just that we have a tshuva here, and as we study it, we'll see that when it came to technical halachic questions, and these one with ramifications for how we treat other people, Rav Kook could in fact be more stringent, more strict than we might expect. So here is the question. The question is, what about converting people? Now, this is 1928, let's remember. So that's a different time than our time. And I'm not in any way saying that Rav Kook would have passed in the same way today. There are all sorts of factors that come into play. But we'll just see what he writes, and then we can think about it also. But he writes about a couple that have already partnered up. So they're not caring about the fact that it's prohibited. Today, I think we would call them living together, how it worked exactly in their time, but they were partnered up. Maybe they were married civilly. It's a Jewish man, in this case, with a non-Jewish woman, or a non-Jewish man with a Jewish woman. Rav Kook writes, right at the beginning, Lo Eidam Mazo She'ela. I don't even understand how it's a question. Now, this is interesting, the fact that he says it that way, because already in the mid to late 1800s, there were rabbanim in Germany in particular who were dealing with these kinds of questions. In Rav Kook's time in 1928, Rav Chaim Ozer Grudzinski is in Achiezer, is ruling on these questions, and he's ruling more leniently, and he's in Eastern Europe. So that Rav Kook is saying, I don't even know how it's a question, is something to pause and to notice and to see that he's holding on to the traditional perspective, which is that there's an explicit Tosefta on this question. And the Tosefta says very clearly that Hanitan Minachrit, if somebody is suspected of having a relationship with a non-Jewish woman, that's for the man, or the other way around, Vinit Gaira, and then she converts, Lo Yisaena. Right, he's not allowed to marry her. So the Tosefta is saying, and this is part of a broad perspective, that we don't want people converting for the sake of marriage, because conversion needs to be, as far as the Gemara and the Talmudic literature is concerned for sure, conversion needs to be, today probably would say, is preferable. The Gemara seems to think that it needs to be out of pure motives, out of the motivation of seeing the Jewish people, wanting to join the Jewish people, thinking that the service of Hashem, that the Jewish in the way that the Jewish people engage in it, is the way that person wants to engage in it. And it's got to be so pure, in fact, that the Gemara's tradition was, in the time of David and Shlomo, when the Jewish people was ascendant, we wouldn't have accepted any converts because they couldn't. There were people who converted at the time, but they did so without a Beit Din having been deeply involved at the beginning, because we couldn't trust that they weren't doing it because being Jewish was so popular and so successful. Right, so if every Jew is a millionaire, let's say, and somebody says, I want to come join the Jews, we have a problem because we have a concern that the person is doing it for the money. It just popped into my head. I hope this isn't a wrong thing to say, but There is a Seinfeld episode where Seinfeld is worried that somebody converts for the jokes, meaning converts so that he can make Jewish jokes. So that wouldn't be a great conversion either because they have an ulterior motive. Here the motive is to get married to this person. So they're having a relationship and one wants to convert. Rav Kook says, I don't understand the answer. He says, Be'etzem ha-gerut, the actual conversion itself, if he's really doing it so that he can marry a certain woman, or he says any conversion that's not the gamri of the shem shamayim, that we can't be sure that the person doing it is doing it for these purest motives, then he quotes an important Rambam. And the way the Rambam expresses it, this is in chapter 13 of Hilchot Yisurei Bia, of the laws of who we can and cannot marry, Halacha Tedvav, paragraph 15, Rambam says, "Shekol chozer min ha'akum b'shvil davar mehavlei ha'olam." Anybody who converts to Judaism from whatever religion they were, and they're doing it for some ulterior motive. Davar mehavlei ha'olam means reasons that have to do with things that go on in the world, but do not have to do with the actual reason to convert, which is to join the special people who have this special role in the service of God. The Rambam says, "Eino migeher tzedek." That's not a fully righteous convert. Even though that's true, there were many people who did convert in the time of David and Shlomo, and they did it before courts that didn't realize you're not supposed to accept conversion. Rambam calls them hedyotot, really not expert, not well-versed people. And the high court was nervous about them, was concerned about them. They were worried about them. What does that mean? Lo dochin. They didn't push them away. They didn't say, well, no, you're not Jewish, because they, after all, had gone to mikvah. And in going to mikvah, they had done an act of conversion, and we don't know if that act might have been sincere. We can't know, and if it might have been sincere. But then, v'lo mikarvinotan. But we also, the Beit Din, wouldn't do anything to bring them closer, ad shetir'eh acharitam, until they see where they came out. Right? I mean, even though they see where they came out, so that would suggest that the conduct of converts afterwards for the Rambam might reveal something about their original conversion. So if they converted and then completely did not observe the religion, that would suggest that their conversion was never sincere and it might never have been a conversion. It's not that they've now converted and they're now bad Jews. It might be that they were never Jews. I heard a story once that Rabbi Soloveitchik used to talk about the fact that sometimes you have people who convert for whatever reason, and courts will allow the Bate Din accept their conversion for whatever reason, and then they go to a non-kosher restaurant to celebrate the successful conversion. And the Rav supposedly said, how could you imagine that such a conversion could be valid when they clearly had no intent to observe mitzvah? So the question there is not only that it might not be good for the Jewish people, or we might not be upset, happy about the conversion. It might be that they're not actually Jews. Then we have a lot of people walking around thinking they're Jews or are not Jews, and that makes all sorts of complications that come up later. But Rav Kook didn't know the Rav's work, obviously, because Rav was younger than he was, much younger, like a generation younger. In any case, the Rambam goes on, Malach Yud Zayin, Afilu Nodash Bishvil Davar Hu Mitkayer. And the Rambam then says, though, but even if we know that he has a reason, or she has a reason they're converting, if the man has a circumcision and goes to mikvah, yetsa miklal ha'akum, he's done enough that we don't treat him as just a regular non-Jew, v'choshishin lo, and we are concerned, we look, ad sheyid ba'er tzidkuto, until it's clear that this person, in fact, sincerely converted. Meaning, the Rambam is saying, and Rav Kook is open to this idea, that you have people who are converting for the wrong reasons, or we're not sure what the right reasons are, and they do the act of conversion. It seems like the Rambam's view is, well, we can't know what the story is, but if they end up acting Jewishly, they end up keeping the Torah and the mitzvot in a reasonable way, so that would suggest that their conversion was valid, and then maybe we would include them. Then it would seem we would include them. Imkain. Now back to Rav Kook. Imkain. If so, the etzem ha-gerut, in the essence of the gerut, it's hedyotot who are accepting it. So he says, we can't do more. We can't go further than what David and Shlomo did. So therefore, once they've converted, even if they've converted, anybody who has the ability, who says that they shouldn't get married to these people, is obligated to oppose it. So those words are important to read inside, just because they are Rav Kook, in a whole different framework than we're used to seeing. Kol mi sheyesh bekocho limchot, shelo yisadru lahem kiddushin chayav limchot. Anybody who has the ability, the power, to protest and to stop them setting up this marriage is obligated to do so. But if there are hedyotot, meaning people who don't know the halacha well and aren't observing the halacha properly in Rav Kook's view of the halacha, and they arrange the marriage, what are we going to do? Right? As Chazal say, that if Chazal already said that if the person who had had this prior relationship with a non-Jew then got married, we don't force them to separate. And that's especially true that the marriage is no worse than the actual gerut itself, where the whole point was that we didn't want people to say they're getting converting for a reason, because we don't like that idea. We really want conversions to be sincere. So if after the person converts, we don't push them away, we wait around to see what the story is, then for sure, if they got married, you also wouldn't do so. In other words, Rav Kook is saying, we don't want the marriage really to have happened. We don't want the conversion to have happened because it looks very much like the person is converting for the spouse. And for all that, some people can respond that this, maybe they converted sincerely for the spouse. And there are certainly cases, I know of at least two that come to mind, although I certainly won't name names, but I know of at least two where the person converted and gives every impression of it having been a sincere conversion in the sense that they observe halacha and they observe the Torah in the same way as their spouse and in the same way as the community in which they live. So in their standards of conversion, they would seem to be doing it sincerely. Rav Kook understands that. But the prescription of the Gemara was, the prescription of the Talmudic literature was that we don't, such people should not be allowed to convert, and that if they convert, they also shouldn't marry the person with whom they had the prior relationship, because that casts a shadow of doubt upon the original conversion. Nonetheless, if the person actually converts, for whatever reason, the Rambam had already told us that we don't push them away, we don't say, oh, you're not Jewish, because they went through the process of conversion, but we wait and see, this is ideally what's supposed to happen, which is to wait and see if the conversion was in fact sincere, and if they in fact continue to act as Jews. Once they do for a while, then we can accept them. But part of that should be, they should not marry the person for whom we worry that they converted. But if they do, we won't require them, or we won't attempt. And Rav Kook thinks one should protest such a marriage, and if one has the ability to stop such a marriage, one should do so. But if not, and the marriage goes through, then we would accept it and not make them separate, and not try to separate them from each other. Two more points on this issue that he makes right at this point. One is, he says, and I'm not going to go on with this, and you need I see no reason to go on at length, because it's obvious. So for Rav Kook in 1928, it was obvious that we shouldn't do such things. Later on, I think it's become less obvious to many people, because I know many rabbis who will just help out and assist in these situations. Rav Kook thought that was a problem. Times have changed, perhaps. It's a different world, and you have to respond to different things, but it's interesting to watch him do that. Second piece is that he notes that in some cases, we say that a Beit Din of the court would punish a person who acts inappropriately. So you could have imagined somebody saying that if we tell a person before the spouse converts and before they get married, listen, you're not supposed to do this. The halacha is really that we have to worry about this and you guys should not get together. You might have thought that we would punish them or fine them by saying they have to separate. But Rav Kook says that it's not even clear that we always create fines of such sorts, even when a person has violated an actual isser in what they're doing. And certainly if the whole problem is only la'az, the people will say, oh, they didn't convert sincerely, they only converted in order to marry this person. For that, we certainly, Rav Kook says, we certainly wouldn't require them to separate, we wouldn't make any knas on them. Then Rav Kook reminds us of something that we said before, but that bears repeating. He says, if you read the Rambam carefully, it seems that if it becomes clear to us that the conversion was not the Shem Shemayim, the conversion was not sincere and not fully meant, the issue is that it's not a gerut, it's not a conversion. Although Beit Din won't push these people away, because maybe, he says, you chozrim achar kach l'shem shamayim. Maybe it will become sincere. So there's also the possibility, even though we don't bet this way, that's an important point, Rav Kook is saying clearly, right? Some people might say to you, well, the best thing to do, and I think it might be the Reb Chaim Moser in Shudach Yezus or something along those lines, the best thing to do is they're together anyway. They're going to stay together no matter what we do. We might as well convert whichever one of them is not Jewish. And yes, maybe the conversion will be sincere, right? That's one possibility. One possibility is that for all that they're converting for the person, they're also willing to take on sincerely the religion. Another possibility is they're not sincere right now, which would mean, according to Rambam, that it's not actually a conversion, which would mean that this couple is now living together. It's a Jewish one Jewish partner, one non-Jewish partner, but maybe over the course of time, it will change, right? They think they've converted. From the course of thinking they've converted, who knows what could happen, right? In the same way that people who are completely removed from observance sometimes come back to observance, and we can't always know when that's going to happen. Maybe that'll happen here, and we talk shelo lishma balishma, and that something that started out not being sincere could end up being sincere. But if it was clear that she never or he never came to join the religion in any sincere way, and it was always just about being able to make the marriage happen, so that person is a non-Jew. Now, Rav Kook doesn't say it explicitly, but it would seem like if that were true, let's suppose it's the man and who's not Jewish, and he converts. And at the time that he converts, it wasn't sincere, which the Rambam implies means it's not actually a conversion. And then let's suppose that over time it actually becomes sincere. It would seem to mean he would need another conversion. But Rav Kook doesn't say that. Rav Kook just says maybe over time it'll become sincere. Could be that Rav Kook thought maybe the person would end up going to mikvah at some point, or that there would be a sort of a well-known to everybody aspect of this, that he would have gone to mikvah in front of a lot of people. They would realize it was for Jews, and that would work. Rav Kook doesn't get into that, but that's an interesting question to think about. Is the person technically Jewish or not? Now, we could assume that, well, if somebody goes in front of a court and they go to mikvah and they come out, the court says you're Jewish, they're Jewish. That would be the formal version of it. If you see the act of conversion, then it must be a conversion. And Rav Kook is pointing out the Rambam seems to imply that that's not true. That unless there is a particular version of internal commitment, it's not a conversion. So that would be here as well, but you have the other possibility that the person, even if at the time it wasn't sincere, maybe later it could be sincere, and therefore they would become, therefore it would then take effect in some way. But if not, the person is not Jewish, and then in that situation, he thinks maybe it would be more similar to, and here the halacha is, let's say somebody has rumored to have a relationship with a married woman, or there's another problem with Shliach HaGet. Shliach HaGet is, let's say a husband is getting divorced from his wife and he sends a person with the get. That person who was sent with the get is not supposed to marry the now divorced woman because we worry that there was some improper interaction ahead of time. So there, we do say that if they get married, they have to separate from each other. The reason that doesn't apply to our couple who have gotten married, even though one of them converted and they shouldn't have gotten married, Rav Kook says, is that there's a difference with a married woman who is suspected of having an affair with somebody, and we say that those two shouldn't get together, or the Shliach HaGet, the messenger who brought her get. Rav Kook points out that the Mabit says there's a general rule that if she gets married to somebody she wasn't supposed to, the rule that we force that require them to divorce from each other is only in a situation where it was that man in particular this woman couldn't marry. So the examples would be, a woman is married to, let's say, Reuven, and she's suspected of having an affair with Shimon or improper relations with Shimon. So we say, if Reuven divorces her, she shouldn't marry Shimon. But she can marry any other man in the world. Same thing, man brings her get as a messenger for the husband. She shouldn't marry that man who brought her the get because we're worried about improprieties and how it looks improper. Okay, all that is good, but she again has the ability to marry many, many other people. What about when the problem that's being raised should mean that she wouldn't be able to marry anybody else and she's now married somebody she shouldn't have? The example that the Mabit gives is the problem of Mayim She'en Lahem Sof. Mayim She'en Lahem Sof is the problem of, let's say, sadly, a man, his boat capsizes or he's lost in water where it's not a closed water environment, so we can't be sure that he didn't show up somewhere else. So meaning, let's suppose we see a man, sadly, in a lake, and we see all the borders of the lake, and we see all the edges of the lake, and the man disappears in the lake. He's on a boat, and we can't find the body. But in that's called Mayim She'esh Lahem Sof. But there, since we can watch and be sure the man hasn't come up in the amount of time in which if a man doesn't come up out of water, the man has certainly passed away, that can be enough to allow to say that sadly the man has passed away. But in the case of Mayim She'en Lahem Sof, like an ocean, where we can't be sure that waves didn't drag him far out of our line of sight, such that he came up and had got a breath and survived in a way that we couldn't have seen and known of. So that creates a terrible problem of agunot, because we can't be sure that the man has passed away, even though we feel fairly sure. We can't be sure halachically, and therefore she's not supposed to get married again. So there, if she does get married, even though we warned her not to, the Mabit says, there we wouldn't force her to get divorced. And the reason we wouldn't force her to get divorced in that situation is because in forcing her to get divorced, we're just making her an aguna all over again, because there's nobody she can marry. Because the case of Mayim Shein Lahem Sov is a case where we think halachically she is supposed to worry that maybe her husband is still alive and therefore not marry anybody else. That means if she went ahead and married somebody else. Now, we're not sure. The truth is, between you and me, we feel that he's probably not alive. So we feel she's probably okay. But that's not the point here. The point here is, even though we're halakhically saying we don't know if he's passed away, once she's married somebody else, so you could say, well, this whole relationship could be an adulterous relationship, but if we force her to get divorced now, there's nobody else she can marry because she'll again be in this aguna situation. And in those situations, we don't force them to get divorced. Her having decided that she is confident enough that her husband, first husband passed away, that she's allowed to marry, means we won't force her to get divorced. That applies here because in our situation as well, the problem with this woman... The problem with this woman would seem to be a more general one. And the reason I say the Rav Kook says it's a more general one is because it is true we're worried, like a married woman who's suspected of having an affair, we're worried that this woman is converting for this man, and so it's about this man, but the problem fundamentally is that we're worried that the conversion isn't sincere. So it's true, this is the man for whom it is, and theoretically you could say, well, if we force her to divorce this man, and she stays Jewish, and marries, she can marry somebody else, and that should prove that the conversion was sincere. But Rav Kook is focusing on the fact that right now, our problem is that we're not sure the conversion is sincere, and if that's true, then when she gets divorced, she won't be able to marry anybody else, and that should therefore bring into play the Mabit's idea, that if we're going to make her to get divorced, but it's not a problem that's restricted to this man, it's a problem that applies to lots of men, or to most men, or all men, that would be a problem. However, here too, since she could then convert sincerely, maybe you could say there is no general prohibition. Not only that, complicating the Mabit, our use of the Mabit, is the Ramah doesn't seem to agree with the Mabit in general. Why? How do we know that? Because the Rambam paskins in Shulchan Aruch, the way it goes like this. Shulchan Aruch says in Eben Ezer 17:34, the chin ha'isha sheheid la'acher shetava bala b'mayim shein lo'sof, a woman whose husband drowned in water like an ocean, water that goes on beyond our line of sight, can't get married. And even if a Beit Din tells her that she could and that she didn't get married, she still shouldn't get married. But if she gets married, the court told her she could. They were mistaken, I think, is the idea. But if she's gotten married, we don't make her get divorced. And then the Haggadah, the Ramah adds, "V'davka shenisayt al pichachamu b'taut." Either she married because a Torah scholar told her she could, or she made a mistake that she thought she was allowed to. But if she did it knowing that she wasn't allowed to, then we do make her get divorced. And only, he says, when the testimony is that he drowned and that they watched for such amount of time that nobody could survive underwater that amount of time. They didn't see him anywhere. So while it's true that theoretically the water could have carried him out of our line of sight, and that's why halakhically she's really not supposed to get remarried, we do have some evidence that the likelihood is that this man sadly passed away. Or if they just testify that he was on a boat that drowned, that's not good enough. And in those cases, the Ramah says she should get divorced. So that seems to say that the Ramah doesn't accept the Mabit's idea that in those situations we don't make her get divorced because she has nobody else to marry. It seems like the Ramah thinks the issue is that where she had some right to get married, meaning a court told her she was allowed to, or a Torah scholar told her she was allowed to, that's when we don't make her divorced. But if she had no right to get married, that seems to be the issue, rather than the Mabit's idea. That the issue is whether or not she'll be able to remarry if we force her to divorce this current husband. Leaving aside the question of whether we would require them or try to require them to get divorced, the Rav Kook points out that the Mabit also claims that we would not be required to try to stop them from getting married to begin with. Not that we wouldn't tell them they're allowed to get married, but that we wouldn't have a responsibility to step in and try hard to avoid the wedding from happening in all those cases. And that would be true then for our non-Jewish man or woman who converted for the spouse, that the Mabit, Rav Kook says, would seem to imply that while it's true that we prefer they not get married, we wouldn't try to step in and stop them from getting married. But But Rav Kook has a problem with that because the Yerushalmi says they shouldn't get married, and Rav Kook says it sounds. Yerushalmi has a case of the Beit Din said to them not to get married, and according to the Mabit, you'd have to say that Beit Din made a mistake and they warned them in a place where they shouldn't have. So Rav Kook then says, "V'ulay nachon shelo lahatraot." That it's perhaps it's better not to, because it's only somebody who comes to ask you a question is when you answer it. So that's a broader issue to think about that's relevant here as well, which is Rav Kook is pointing out that in halacha, we have situations where the halacha is we're required to do everything we can to avoid a situation. Then there are other cases where we think something is wrong, but we'll only say it if the person asks us. And then there are probably other cases where, even if they ask us, we won't quite tell them how wrong we think that it is, because we think they're not going to listen to us. So the range of how Torah scholars or courts or people of halachic authority deal with things going on around them is, there's a range. It's not that they always say what needs to be said. And that's something that's worth other people remembering and thinking about, meaning that we could be walking along assuming we're just fine. And the truth is, the Torah scholars around us disagree, but they're not going to tell us those things until we ask them, because there are things that Torah scholars are supposed to speak up about, even if nobody asks them. But there are other things that they don't speak up. And this would be one example. Rav Kook is suggesting that perhaps the Mabit would say that when it came to this couple, that we wouldn't tell them not to get married unless they came to ask us whether there's, and then we would say, well, the truth is that since this conversion has questions to it because of the motives involved, we think that you shouldn't get married. We would only say that once we were asked. Except that, once again, it's unclear that Mabit's idea can be applied here according to Rav Kook, because it could be that Mabit was speaking only in the case where the husband had drowned in that water, and there it's that we might assume that she knows the halakha in that situation. It might be that we assume that women understand and realize that they're not supposed to get married until a court verifies that husband has passed away. And so therefore, we don't bother to step in to tell it to her, or we assume she will ask Torah scholars before she allows herself to get married again, and then Torah scholars will tell her the halakha, and that's why maybe Mabit would say we don't have to step in there, as opposed to our situation. That would mean, though, if there's a place where we see that people tend to ignore what Torah scholars say because they don't care, or they forget, or they don't know, he thinks that might bring us back to a situation, even according to Mabit, where the courts have to publicize the prohibition and publicize that it's wrong and tell people not to go against what Chazal said. And according to that, he says in all the cases in the Gemara where Chazal said that people shouldn't get married, which would include where one of the partners converted for the sake of marrying the other partner, it would seem to be, he thinks, and although that, and especially when we see that rabbis, and he writes it as Hanei Dimitkarian Rabbanim, people who are called rabbis, who are just ignoring this sentence of Chazal, this statement of Chazal's, that such people should not marry each other, then it would seem to be clear to Rav Kook that every Torah scholar, every real rabbi who is faithful to what Chazal say, have to do their best to stand in the face of this breach and to try as hard as they can to keep the words of Chazal being fulfilled as a permanent thing. And he goes on in that vein. So Rav Kook's perspective was, this is 1928, it's not so, it's pretty late in the game in terms of these issues, because these have been around for a while by his time, and yet he's firm that we should not be having these couples marry each other. Once they get married, he's pretty sure we don't try to get them to divorce each other, but he thinks that people should be standing up and speaking about it. The history of the Jewish people has gone in another direction, and I'm not editorializing on that issue, but worth noticing that as of 1928, on the 25th of Sivan, Rav Kook was not yet sanguine with the idea that people were marrying people who had converted for the sake of marriage, because of the issues that come up, even as Rav Kook also recognized that in some of those situations, the conversion was nonetheless sincere, and that the later activity of the convert could show that it was sincere. Nonetheless, he thought it was something to be avoided, to be protested, and stood up against, and that is a response of a day for the 25th of Sivan. Have a great day.